Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to the Financial Health and Income Network podcast. I'm Carol Hornett. I'm your host, and I'm also the president of the Council for Disability Awareness. We're delighted today to have our guest, who's Chris O'Connor. He's the general counsel and co-founder of a company called Citizens Disability. And Citizens Disability is a member of the CDA, which is the acronym for the Council for Disability Awareness. And they're a leading Social Security disability insurance and advocacy firm. Chris oversees the client advocacy program at Citizens Disability and has been a trial advocate for over 20 years. We're going to spend most of our time talking and giving you good information. So if you want to read more about Chris, you can read the show notes where there's a link to his bio and more information about him. So part of what we are doing today is just that. When given Chris's background, you probably get a sense of the topic. We want to talk to people today about Social Security disability insurance, a little bit about advocacy and what that is. And part of why we've invited Chris is that through our social media channels and our blog, we've seen a tremendous amount of interest about what we call SSDI. You'll probably hear us use that term throughout the show. Just really a tremendous interest, particularly in the last month, that may have something to do with the pandemic and people leaving work for a host of reasons, including disability and longer-term disabilities. And so we invited Chris to come today to talk to us a little bit about the process, but to also walk us through one of the least discussed aspects of SSDI, the application process, is the family and caregivers and what the impact and the role of family and caregivers are in the SSDI advocacy process. So welcome, Chris.
Thanks for having me, Carol. Just briefly, I think there's some misunderstandings about the Social Security Disability Program and what its purpose is, right? So this is it's a government program to provide wage replacement and medical coverage to folks who have been in the workforce for a significant amount of time, have paid into the system, like everybody who works pays into the system through FICA taxes or Medicare taxes. And if an event happens that causes them to become unable to sustain work, this serves as a disability insurance program to provide some wage replacement and medical care. I think a misconception is that this isn't an earned benefit. You hear the word entitlement a lot, and this isn't a traditional entitlement, other than it's something that people pay for in every weekly check. They take the money from you. In exchange for taking that money, the government is making a promise that if something happens to you and you can't sustain work anymore, that they're going to provide you with some support, both financially and medically. Something else that I think isn't fully understood is that this program and benefits associated with it aren't just for injured workers. There are parts of the benefit program that do go towards family members, in particular minor children. There's a thing called PIA, which is the amount of money that you would get if you became unable to work and eligible for Social Security disability income. But beyond that, there's probably another 50% of that benefit that is available to minor children. Of folks who become disabled and unable to work and eligible for the program. And our role is an advocate, and that's what we do. We help people navigate what is a complicated, long, and difficult process through filing applications, filing forms, interfacing with the Social Security Administration is helpful and useful to folks who are trying to get the benefit. But our role as advocate is limited to some extent in terms of what we can do. And what I found in the 25-plus years that I've been doing this is that it's really important that friends and family members in particular kind of appreciate what folks are going through and provide support for them through the process.
You know, Chris, that's a wonderful overview. I just want to ask a question. One thing we've seen in our comments from people who've read actually our most recent blog post on SSDI is how long does it take? Like, how long does this process typically take? You know, from the point they apply to they maybe get a first decision to they actually ultimately get an award?
Yeah, I think good news and bad news in answering that question. The good news is they've actually made some progress in terms of how long it takes during COVID. But as a general proposition, it takes 3 to 6 months to get an initial determination. Around 4 out of 5 are denied initially. So there's a big bucket of people who have to appeal that. It takes another 3 to 6 months to get a decision on your first appeal. A smaller percentage of people are approved at that level. And finally, there's a third stage of appeal, which is called a hearing. You get to present your case to an administrative law judge, and that takes about a year. So from start to finish, you're looking at anywhere from 18 to 24 months from the time that you apply for disability until you have your best opportunity to be approved. And many folks are waiting several months before they even apply. So if you're in a situation where you've got something that is going to keep you out of work for 12 months, you should quickly move on this process to start the application because it takes a long time.
And is that when you would recommend somebody reach out to you, Chris? Somebody like you or, you know, your company?
Yeah, I think one of the primary benefits of an advocate is they get you through the process, right? They know when to file the forms. They know what the form should say. They know when. They make sure that you make it to the end, because at the end is where you have when you get to present your case to an administrative law judge, is where you've got your best chance of being successful. And we see countless folks who get stuck in this cycle of applying, getting denied, reapplying, getting denied, reapplying, getting denied. They never kind of take that next step to appeal and then appeal again. So there's lots of things that advocates do, but it's one of the most valuable things that advocates do. They get you in a position where you have your best chance of being successful on your claim. But the other thing I wanted to talk about is that the challenge that folks applying for this process face, kind of personally, emotionally, mentally, because it does take so long, right? If you think about your life, I think about my life, it's not that exciting, right? I get up in the morning, I get my little one off to school, and then I go to work. I come home, I take care of my kids, I interact with my wife, I go to bed, and then I do it all over again. And the folks who are applying for disability remove that middle part of their day, right? Our identity is work in many instances. And when you remove that from somebody's life, there's a big hole, and it impacts people, right? So I've seen it's almost an invariable truth that folks who go out of work with bad backs or kidney disease or really serious physical problems almost invariably develop some level of depression, and it's often a level of depression or mental health situations that are impactful on their ability to kind of function day to day. And as an advocate working with a client, I'm limited in terms of kind of the resources and help that I can provide to someone to deal with those struggles. And I think it's really important that claimants, I encourage claimants to rely on family members, but they're often reluctant to do that. People have a tendency not to seek help. They feel like this is a sign of weakness. This is something that they can manage themselves. They can tough through it. But it's incredibly important for folks going through this to have support of loved ones and friends, the people who are most important to them and who are around them. And some examples of that are just being supportive and understanding and appreciative of the struggles that the person might be facing. You know, people put a positive face forward. They always want to seem like they're okay. Not accepting statements that, yeah, things are fine for me, and kind of maybe probing a little bit further to make sure that people are really doing okay is something that's invaluable that family can provide to folks. People have a tendency, because it takes so long, folks give up, right? They stop going to the doctor because they're not getting any better. But to prove a disability case, it's incredibly important to have medical documentation supporting not only your conditions, but the limitations that those symptoms and conditions cause you. So encouraging people to, having spouses, friends, sisters, encouraging people to go to the doctor, even though they don't want to go to the doctor, to help them fill out forms, to help them get forms that are supported from their doctor. These are things that friends and family are invaluable in kind of pushing people to the finish line to make sure that claimants, folks who are dealing with this stuff, really have the best chance of being successful when they get the chance to present their case to a judge.
You know, I, that is, I so appreciate your passion, your obvious passion around this, and the importance of what you're saying. I rarely talk about my background, but I actually started in both research and in rehabilitation, including running an industrial medicine program and a work hardening program. And so, like you, I got a real insight to what it's like when people are out of work, when they're out of work a long time, and what a tremendously difficult process that is. And I'll add, my colleague, Fred Schott, at the CDA, leads our research initiatives, and since April of last year, he's been downloading the files from the Household Pulse Survey, which I actually happen to be in the first round of, and it's a mobile phone driven survey that the government, it'll pop up in your text message, offers for you to participate in for a closed period of time. And since April of 2020, they've been following the pandemic, and specifically the topic we've been most following is anxiety and depression. And in August of 2020, the government added some questions, including, have you applied or have you considered applying for SSDI within the next 12 months? And the work Fred's done in cutting through their data files, we've found that the number one group of Americans right now are people who are anxious or depressed, self-report, are people who have either already applied for SSDI or are contemplating doing so in the next 12 months. So to your point, this is a real emotional toll on people.
Right. Yeah, and it's often a struggle to get folks to have the self-insight to be able to appreciate that they're struggling with mental health issues associated with their bad, you know, they'll say, I have a bad back, I don't have mental health issues, but because there's a stigma associated with it, right? And I think my role as advocate is to say, this is normal, this happens all the time, and that mental health conditions are no less real than physical problems, right?
Right.
The misconception is that, well, if you're depressed, then just cheer up, suck it up, and be better. But it's a physiological condition. Something's happening in the brain and in the body that's causing the symptoms associated with depression or anxiety. And we know, it just as if the herniated disc causes pain in the lower back with shooting pain into the leg, and we know that's true because medication works, right? So folks who take medication often feel better. And that's changing, the medication changes the physiological or the chemical interactions that are happening in your brain. So we know that it's as real as a broken leg, but people are reluctant to one, acknowledge that they have the problem, and two, seek help for it, because there's this belief that there's a stigma associated with it, right? Like I've had shouting matches with guys who were construction workers or truck drivers who refused to go to see a psychiatrist or psychologist or admit or acknowledge that they have these kind of problems. And I encourage strongly people who are related to or interact with folks who are going through this disability process to be aware and look for signs and symptoms and indications that somebody may be struggling with some mental health issues associated with what was initially a physical problem, and to encourage them to seek the help that they need. It benefits the person in two ways. One, in terms of their case, it can be tremendously helpful because it's another condition that imposes limitations. And when the agency is making a determination as to whether somebody's disabled, they're going to look at all of the conditions that they have and all of the limitations that those conditions cause, and it increases the likelihood that somebody's going to get approved. And that's important. But more importantly, this can be life and death for folks, right? Like, it doesn't have to be, but it can be. And the treatment can help, and it can help people have better insight, better understanding, and their day-to-day life will improve if they actually are willing to go out and seek the help that they need for these conditions that they're experiencing and maybe in some instances are refusing to recognize.
What, very well said. You know, Chris, one of the things that came to mind for me is something that it makes sense to me that it exists. I was unaware until recently that it exists, that sometimes, and obviously people can't advocate for themselves. Maybe they have a brain injury. Maybe they have severe depression and they can't advocate for themselves. Maybe there's a variety of reasons. Maybe they have really significant injuries. I understand that there's a role sometimes that a family member can play called a substitution of party.
So it's a great point. Substitution of party is if somebody dies during the claim process. But the point that you're making
is
the point that you're making is right on. Right. So if you look at a mental health visit note, they do what they call a mental status exam, and one of the areas that they're inquiring about or assessing is insight. And insight is the ability to understand and appreciate what you're going through. And regardless of the conditions, folks are often unable to appreciate their limitations. Like it's a symptom of traumatic brain injuries. Folks who have significant traumatic brain injuries with cognitive deficits, it's called confabulation, where it's this defense mechanism that people will effort unconsciously and unintentionally to represent themselves as normal. I had a client years ago who had a tremendously significant brain injury to the point where he would put his two kids in the car, get in the other car, and drive away with the kids in the car that was left in the driveway. And if you saw him, you would say, hey, you remember we had lunch yesterday, even if we didn't have lunch yesterday. And didn't remember, but he would say, yeah, we had lunch. He wasn't lying. It was a symptom of his condition. But the same is true for folks with mental health. The same is true with physical problems. They don't want to acknowledge that they're limited in certain ways, right? So, like, they'll tell you things like, if you ask, can you shovel your driveway? They'll say, sure, I can shovel my driveway. Well, that's not necessarily consistent with somebody, but they have a bad back or a bad leg or a bad ankle. That's not consistent with someone who's disabled and unable to work. But what they'll forget to tell you is that, sure, they can shovel their driveway the morning after a storm, but for the rest of that day, they're going to have to be in bed because their back hurts so much, or they're going to have to go take pain medication to get through the next 6 hours. We see this over and over and over again. So we will often ask to talk to somebody's spouse or talk to somebody's child if they're old enough, or somebody else who knows them, to get a better sense as to kind of how their conditions affect them, because people aren't necessarily the best at advocating for themselves mm-hmm. and identifying where they have limitations, right? Mm-hmm. With mental health stuff, memory and task completion is often a problem, but they don't appreciate that memory and task completion is a problem, right? I can't tell you the number of clients who I've had start fires while making simple meals on a stove because they forgot that it was on the stove. That's a consistent occurrence across hundreds and hundreds of claimants that I've worked with over the years. And they're not going to be in a position to be able to effectively advocate for themselves because they don't see it as a problem. So relying on other people who know them and interact with them frequently to get a better and more complete sense of how their conditions impact them is really important to presenting the best case for the folks that we're working with. So family and friends are incredibly important in that perspective.
If you don't mind me interrupting, something that occurred to me as I'm listening to you is, you know, perhaps let's say you're a family member or a friend and you know someone who's ill or injured and is really struggling, not able to work, but is dead set against applying for any kind of help, whether it's disability insurance, if that's available to them, or meaning either employer offered or private disability insurance, or never mind the SSDI process. Can a family member who believes that their loved one is probably eligible for SSDI benefits, can they file on their loved one's behalf? Can they contact you and try to advance the process?
They can't. As a general statement, no, they can't. I mean, if there's issues and guardianships and those, they can in that instance. But as a general statement, no. I think tools that folks could use in encouraging people to take advantage of these benefits is that I think there's a misconception that this is some sort of government handout, right?
Right.
And once you appreciate that it's not, that stigma goes away, and they're more. Folks are often more willing to kind of go down the path, right? Most people don't know this is happening, but the government takes money out of your paycheck every single week in exchange for this promise. And that promise is to give you some money and provide medical care if you become so sick that you can't work. And countless people don't appreciate that. Like, they I don't want a government handout. Well, it's not a government handout. This is your money that you paid into the system. It's an earned benefit for the year, earned benefit over the years and years that you've been working and paying taxes.
Do you think part of the challenge, Chris, is that when people see FICA, A, they might not understand what it is, but B, if they do understand what it is, that they only relate it to Social Security retirement?
100%. It's 100% that. They don't know that there's a disability program associated with FICA taxes and with Social Security, because we hear most often you're hearing about it in the context of retirement and retirement benefits. It's not in the news. And when they talk about solvency of Social Security, they're talking about it in the context of retirement. The disabled population is I don't know how to say it. Could be better informed, I guess. We could all do better. I know that I and we as an organization could do better educating the general population about options and benefits available to the disabled population.
And there's an advantage to someone, isn't there, if they receive, if let's say they're 40 years old and they receive an SSDI award, there's an advantage to that acceptance into the SSDI program related to their retirement, isn't there?
100%, right? So if you stopped working at 40 and then you seek to get your – and don't get disability SSDI benefits, and if you stop working at 40 because of a disability, don't receive SSDI benefits, they're going to pay your retirement based on your earnings record, which ends at 40, right? There's a big gap there, and there's a big hole in terms of what earnings will be. And what the SSDI program does is it eliminates those – we call them zeros, right? So if they're looking at your earnings history, they're zeros. From the calculation as to what your retirement benefit should be, we deal with folks who are in their 60s and have opted for early retirement instead of filing for disability benefits, and we encourage those folks to file for disability benefits, because if they can be approved, they'll receive disability benefits up until their full retirement age, and their full retirement amount will be increased because they won't have those zeros and they won't have the opt-in for the early retirement at 62 and a half.
That's an incredibly important thing for people to know, right? I mean, it can really change your entire lifestyle for the rest of your life based on, you know, being able to be financially solvent and viable.
It's exactly right. And it makes a huge difference, right? It makes a huge difference because folks are, you know, that's 20 years later. You know, if you make it to 85, that's 20 years that you're relying on your Social Security retirement. A few hundred bucks a month makes a huge difference in terms of your ability to kind of the lifestyle that you're going to lead. I want to circle back to this idea of emotional support. I was on a call today with the leadership of NOSCR, and we were talking about a different issue, but one of the questions they asked is, and they're focused on, is do you encounter folks, you know, this takes 18 to 24 months, do you encounter folks who don't make it through the process? They don't live long enough to make it through the process. And at our company, there is a job, right? It's a job to find substituted parties for people who die while they're waiting in line to get their chance to get disability benefits. And I look, just in April alone, we've got 60 folks who are currently in our clients and in our portfolio who have died at various stages in the process while they're waiting for benefits, right? Like, mortality rates for folks who suffer from disability, like life expectancy for folks with disability, is significantly lower than it is for the general population. And a lot of the folks that we're dealing with who are applying for disability benefits have serious, serious conditions that regardless of treatment and regardless of how well you take care of it, ultimately result in an early death for folks. And we see that all the time. The other kind of thing that I wanted to talk about today is the financial hardship that folks waiting for disability benefits, right? And the consequence that has on claimants, right? I talked earlier about you remove work and that has significant mental health problems, causes significant mental health problems for lots of people. But, you know, if people don't have lots of savings and reserves, right? Like, if you're kind of the average person making the average salary, you don't have cash in the bank to keep you floated, keep you going for 12 months, 18 months, 24 months. And that struggle to survive during that period of time while you're waiting to get approved for benefits takes a tremendous toll on people, emotionally, physically. Everything kind of is amplified because you're worried about having a place to live. You're worried about having heat. You're worried about all kinds of things. I mean, one of the very first cases that we won at Citizens when we started in 2010, the client was able, the retroactive award that the claimant got was able to get his house out of foreclosure. He was a week away from being thrown out of his home that he'd been in for 20 years. And because he was awarded benefits, he was able to get enough money to get current on his mortgage. But if it had been one more week, he would have been homeless, right? And we've got lots of folks who end up homeless while they're waiting for this process. And that ties into kind of where family can be helpful to people, right? Like, it's not enough to just say, things are okay. If you ask if it's okay, that superficial, you okay, yeah, I'm okay, might not be enough for folks going through this process. We need to kind of ask some additional questions and dig a little bit deeper and be open to being as helpful as we possibly can to our loved ones who are going through this. This was just a very recent example that we came across. It was an older guy. He was in his late 50s, early 60s, had worked with his sister for 37 years. They'd worked together doing some sort of land surveying, and they talked every day, and they couldn't have been closer. And she would ask if he's okay, and she would say he's okay. And as he got towards the end of the claim, he killed himself. He committed suicide. Mm. And she had that fear that he was going through the struggles that he was going through. And when she went to his house, he had sold everything in the house. There was nothing left, right? He had sold the furniture. He had sold the plates. Right. He had sold everything that he had just to try and keep things going, until he got to the end where he was going to be approved for disability benefits. And he just ran out of time, and he ran out of resources and felt like there was no option for him. And, I mean, she was devastated by it. I mean, she was grateful that he eventually was awarded benefits, but she was devastated by the fact that she felt like she was so close to him and had been interacting with him, but didn't know that he was going through these struggles. That's a regret.
Chris, I can tell you when we did the work hardening program, We paid a lot of attention, and for us, a lot, the hierarchy kind of, because they were with us for 4 to 8 hours a day, so we spent a lot of time with them. And first would be their kid. He couldn't afford for his child to go to travel soccer anymore. And then right. We couldn't reach him by phone because they couldn't pay the cell phone bill. And then I still remember this really young man, he was in his early 30s, said to me, well, the ultimate low point of my life has just started. I have to sell my house, and my family and I are going to move into the basement of my parents' house. And right. It's people, you have to watch for those warning signs. You know, Chris, we've got a little less than 2 minutes left. You've given us such great information. What do you want to close with? What do you want to make sure people take away from this podcast?
Yeah, I think for me, it's awareness of folks who are struggling with physical and mental problems that are preventing them from working, that there is a program, that there are people who can help them, and there is light at the end of that tunnel. They've just got to stick through it, and they've got to make it to the end. And really, I think even more importantly is to make folks who have family members, who have friends, who are going through this process, to be aware and to think about what those folks might be going through and kind of place themselves in their shoes, and to be available and to be a resource and to be helpful and to be supportive and to do what they can to make sure that they kind of that the folks dealing with the disabilities can feel supported enough to make it through the end.
Thank you, Chris. That is incredibly well said. I can't thank you enough. I want to thank you first, Chris O'Connor, from Citizens Disability, for spending this half hour with us, educating people on, in general, about SSDI, but more importantly, the role they can play as a non-applicant but a loved one. It's critical, as you've outlined so eloquently over these last 30 minutes. And I also want to thank, of course, the people who are listening. This is important information. If you chose to listen about SSDI, it's got to be important to you. It's important for information for you to know, for you to share. I am sure if you have questions, you can probably reach out either to CDA, certainly, or to Citizens Disability. Thank you, Chris, and thank you to all our listeners. Have a good day, everyone.
Thank you.